Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9 to 5 for a 5 to 9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
DSW's semi-annual sale is back. Take 40% off all clearance shoes in stores for a limited time. Literally every single clearance item at your DSW store is on sale right now. Sneakers, sandals, any style. If they're on the clearance racks, they're 40% off. So what are you waiting for? Don't sleep on these savings. Get to DSW ASAP. It's all or nothing, people. Shop the DSW semi-annual sale today.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show. Let's do this Chris Herndon deal. Chris Herndon joins me now. Chris, what are we listening to?
That's Crumbling Down by John Mellencamp, the the one celebrity in the house for the Pacers last night against the influx of celebrities from New York in honor of his Pacers and what they've done to the Knicks in the series.
Yeah, it's been impressive considering like a week ago I called him mediocre plus or something on this show, or very good plus or something like that, something disparaging. What do you think? Is you think this Indiana team is hot, or do you think it's because they're playing in the East or do you think that they are better than one imagined? Certainly, I imagine all. Well, what do you think is going on with Indiana that they're off to this impressive 3-1 start over the next?
Oh, I think it's all those things. The East, in the sense that the Thunder have been the best team in the NBA all season, and Thunder are in the other conference. I don't know that there's anyone else in the West that's any better than like the better teams in the East. It's just that the Thunder have been better than everyone. And then obviously the Celtics got hurt and they didn't have to play the Celtics. And so there's that. I think they're a very good team that is in a groove. And so I think they won 50 games. I think, you know, they were in the Eastern Conference Finals last year. They've got two guys now who've made all NBA teams, and Tyrese Halliburton and Pascal Siakam. So they're really good. They also have a coach who's won a title in Rick Carlisle. So, like, they're legit really, really good. They're also a really, really good team that is A, healthy, and B, in a good group. And so, like you know, they're sort of peaking at the right time, so to speak.
And where's Halliburton? And not precisely, but in the ranking of great players, where's Tyrese Halliburton? And by the way, did the Kings pick the wrong point guard? Can we affirmatively say that now? Is Halliburton, he's certainly elevated above De'Aaron Fox, or is it just the stage has been bigger than the ones that De'Aaron Fox has made it to?
He is 17th. I'm joking. I don't know. I don't have a list of where he is among the great players.
I love 17th. I think he's higher than 17th, though. He's probably higher than 17th.
I don't know.
Yeah.
That's a summer exercise. People make their list. I'll make a list if you want me to.
Is he
but
better?
I don't have a list.
What point guards are better than De'Aaron Fox? I mean, than Tyrese Halliburton. There you go. We can do this off the top of our heads. What point guards are better than Tyrese Halliburton?
I mean, SGA is. You can put the same label on people, but people play completely differently.
Right.
Like SGA is technically a point guard. He's not like SGA and Curry. You could say are both better. And they're both, like, you would call them point guards. That would be their, if you got to give them a positional designation.
Right.
But neither of them really play like point guards in the traditional sense, where Tyrese Halliburton really does. But I think SGA and Curry, like, you know, if Curry's healthy, or guys, you probably still rank above
what
him.
What are you doing with Brunson
and then
now?
It's a real, I'm sorry, what's that?
What are you doing with Brunson and Halliburton? Are they're the same?
I don't know, man. It's not definitive. They're in the same cohort, yeah. I would say. They're in the same cohort of players in terms of all NBA caliber, all-star caliber point guards. I think one of the things with Brunson, and this is, I mean, all this is recency bias. It's like the game happens last night, and suddenly right. Tyrese Halliburton's the ninth best player in the league, yeah. And blah, blah, blah. Brunson, neither of them are great defensive players, but Brunson is a worse defensive player on a team that has slightly worse defensive infrastructure, meaning that he's not the only weak link. They also have Towns out there as a weak link. And if there's a story sort of from the game and from the matchup, that's sort of the one I would choose, is that it's hard. The deeper you go into the playoffs, the harder it is to have defensive weak links on the floor. And if we get a Pacers-Thunder finals, which it seems like that's where we're headed, the worst defensive players in the starting lineups of each of those teams are Tyrese Halliburton and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. Halliburton's not that bad. And SGA, I think, got all defensive team votes. You know, and he's still the worst defensive player they're going to put on the floor in their starting lineup. And it's the fact that Halliburton is not good, but, you know, maybe not as bad as a Brunson or a Trae Young, but also, like, has four-plus defenders on the court with him, like, basically all the time. And so I think that aspect of Brunson that you can't really pick on him, you know, is maybe is a difference there, but part of that is team.
Well, and it also goes to, if you're thinking then about the structure of the Grizzlies, it's something that you have to think about, because you're going to be hiding Ja, unquestionably. And can you, again, what are you aiming to do? Life is not all about winning a title. But is it sustainable to have Ja and Bane as your backcourt if you want to go on a deep playoff run?
Well, and even if you don't take it that far, if that's going to be your backcourt, this question of how many other defensive weak links can you have in a rotation and on a roster, and the idea of what is the defensive infrastructure around those guys. I would just start with that, right? Even if you keep those guys, like, can you afford to have how many other weak defenders can you afford to have in the mix? And I've got a few ideas about what that matchup might tell us about the Grizzlies or what to draw from it. And that is one of them.
It's funny, you have a mailbag up. I urge people to read it. I've tweeted it out. It's part two of a mailbag. We haven't honestly barely touched on everything you talked about and everything you wrote about in part one. We may be mining that for the summer and part two. But it does call into question a little bit the future of Santi Aldama, because there's a question about Santi in the mailbag. And
right. He's
obviously a terrific player. You know, a very good player, a productive player. He is another defensive weak link. And so is that a place where you think the Grizzlies might, you know, get a player at roughly as good as Santi Aldama, who plays differently than Santi Aldama?
I think if that were available to do, that is something to be considered. I wonder about the long term, the ultimate viability of Santi's defense in the context of this team. But I also think that, especially if they're going to end up trying to use cap space to renegotiate and extend Jaren, they can't – you can always trade Santi later. Like, you can't let value disappear because it's not perfect value. If you could sign and trade Santi Aldama for someone just as good who fits better, yeah, sure, do that. But that's true of anybody on the team, by the way. If you can trade them for someone who's just as good and fits better, do it. But Santi is talented, and he is 23, and he is a rotation player. And, like, you got to keep your talent level up. And so you can always make deals later if a deal's not there for you on the front end. But I think it's important to maintain sort of roster spot, salary spot, and value there. Even if it's not a perfect way to do it.
The specific question actually was about Santi versus, and again, no one is saying you can just swap these two, whatever, but Santi versus Jonathan Kuminga. Are those players on the same level? How would you analyze those two players? The Warriors.
It's interesting.
Go ahead.
The question that I was asked was, who would I prefer to have if the contracts were the same? And I did. I addressed that question, but to me, the more interesting question, I sort of flipped it, was who's going to command more on a market this summer, like that kind of thing. And I think Santi was a better player last season. If you just stack it up, you know, do a side by side, I think Santi was a better player on the whole last season. But I suspect that Kuminga would be more valued generally. Kevin Pelton did a piece ranking the top 25 free agents for ESPN today, and they're both on the list. But Kuminga is higher on his list than Santi is, if you're looking for sort of one sort of, you know, non-Warriors, non-Grizzlies objective look at that. He does have Kuminga higher. I think the fact that Kuminga was drafted higher and has played for the Warriors, both of those things work in his benefit, even if they have no bearing on his actual talent or value. I do think they work on his benefit. To me, what's more instructive is that Kuminga is a couple years younger and is a better athlete. And that relates back to the defensive issue. I wouldn't say Kuminga has been a good defender at this point, but I think he has the ability to be a good defender much more so than Santi does. And I think people can look at him and see him as a quality starter, you know, small forward who can defend, you know, scale up to the four. And I think with Santi, it's hard to look at him and see him as a quality starter unless you have a really precise team construction that can account for him. So I think Santi projects more as a six-man, seventh-man type going forward, who maybe is not good enough defensively to be on the court at the end. And Kuminga is a guy who can put it all together, projects as a guy who can be a starter on those kind of teams.
I'll take one other question from the mailbag, and it was the first one, which is it logical for Zach Kleiman to admit the team is far away from contention, which he did at his end-of-the-season press conference, then for him to attempt to re-sign Santi and rework Jaren's extension? Are those two things is it logical to say we're far from contention and then try to re-sign Santi and rework Jaren?
It's not, but to me that begs the question of like where on what side of the coin does sort of that break down, right? Is it sort of an admission of failure to like mostly run it back and tweak it? Or is it, if they do that, or is it an admission of, you know, I was sort of exaggerating on the front end. I felt like there was such sort of, you know, they'd just gotten swept. It was the beginning of the playoffs. We hadn't seen all this other stuff happen yet. I think fans were out of sorts, and I think they were sensitive to fans being out of sorts. So to me, there was a little bit of like a PR element. It was sort of like when they came in there, he and Isolo both came in there and said, "This city loves gritty players," you know. I think they were trying to acknowledge and appeal to the disappointment of fans a little bit, more than just a cold calculation. And I think there's a decent chance the team does mostly run it back and tweak it around the edges. And I think that's probably fine given what the options are going to be. But now that you've said, like, we're just not good enough, it is harder to justify doing that.
It's funny. It is an interesting question. That when he said they're far away from contention, basically, I guess the idea is that the fans would have been irritated if he said, "Hey, we're close." And they didn't want to hear that.
100%.
And so then he's like, "Well, okay, we'll acknowledge we're far away from contention." The other thing he said, though, that caught my ear when it happened was, "We're not one player away." And even then, I wondered what that meant. Did it mean, well, it could mean that it's just saying the words that he thinks the fans want to hear, or at least acknowledging the disappointment and the failure of the way things ended. I also wondered if it meant, did it mean like, therefore, we must do major reconstruction? Or did it mean that it's an excuse for not having done more at the trade deadline? I honestly didn't know what that meant. And I guess I would say, I'm rambling here a little bit, but I would also say that, is it really illogical? Even if you are far away from contention, you do want to retain your talent so that you have flexibility going forward. Like, is it really? I mean, you just said you don't want to give Santi away. Like, even if you are not, you don't think you're as close as you want to be, is it irrational to try to keep Santi around and keep Jaren around just in terms of talent acquisition, talent accumulation?
No, it's highly rational. That's probably what they should be doing, you know, depending on what the options are, right? It's always, All of this is like, what's the option? We don't know what the options are. We can guess. I mean, the reality is they have not, even if they sort of plateaued a little bit, and that is frustrating, they're so young still that it's not like the, well, this has run its course, let's blow it up and start over. If you are at that part of an arc, then that's one thing. Then you say, you know, we're not good enough. We get, you know, you could actively choose to just blow it up and start over. You can't actively choose to, we need to make a bold move that makes us better. You can hope to do that. You can seek to do that. But that you can't just guarantee that that's there. If you want to blow your team up, you can press the button and blow it up. But that's not where they're at. And so they need to do whatever they can find is the best thing to do to, like, give the team better chances next season. And that could be a bold move, or it could be, like, you know, keeping this together and the guys getting a little bit older and you got a new head coach and you go out in free agency and, like, you do what you haven't done the last few years, which I think you're going to see them do, is like you sign one or two guys like on the cheap and you see like if you can hit on something. Like, they've done a good job hitting on late draft picks. They've done a good job hitting on sort of G League level free agents, Scottie Pippen types. But, like, you know, who's their Aaron Nesmith, who's on his second team and no one thought much of? And who's their Ty Jerome, who ended up in Cleveland on his, like, fourth team? And, like, can you find someone who, like, becomes better when they, you know, you get them at the right time in the right situation and suddenly they become better? That's like a young veteran or even a pure veteran NBA player. Like, they haven't really done that. So I think they're going to probably take a shot on a guy or two like that this summer. That seems to be the way things are headed.
It's funny. Nobody likes blowing things up more than sports fans or sports. Like I literally popped on. I listened to Simmons and Lowe do a live podcast right after the games. And so I just dipped into that a little. And they'd blown up the Knicks. And they're both very smart and very, I mean, they know a lot more about the NBA than I do, follow it more closely than I do. But, like, they were, you know, trading Cat.
They weren't blow it up and start over, though. They were like, can you trade Cat
and Bridges
and so-and-so for Giannis and all this.
That's
kind
true.
Of stuff.
That's
which,
true.
Like,
that's trying, they were trying,
like,
to be better.
Yeah, like, if you can, sure. But, like, I don't know. That's the thing, you know. Right. The Grizzlies trade Desmond Bane and Sadio Obama for Giannis. Sure.
That's exactly right. Right, but it came from this place that, and maybe it's natural, it's that it's failure if you don't win a title a little bit. It comes from a little bit of a it's failure if you don't win a title. What in the world can we do now? And the truth of the matter is, what in the world they can do now is go back to an East next year that is going to be diminished because Jason Tatum is going to be hurt, and you might be just as good as whatever.
No, same thing with Cleveland. Like, you're set up to be really good next season and have a chance. Now, it is true, and this is this echoing on, because I listened to some of this pod this morning that you're referring to, and I agree with the point I think the Simmons made about assuming the Knicks lose the series, which certainly seems like they're about to, not over yet, but certainly seems like it's headed that way. This is like, you know, this is a great opportunity they didn't take advantage of. You know,
that's true.
You have home court advantage in the Eastern Conference Finals. You know, Boston's out, Cleveland's out. You got the home court advantage against the Pacers team, who's good, but is not, you know, you haven't been to the NBA Finals, I think, since like 99 or something like that. Haven't won a title since early 70s. And, like, it's all set up for you. And, like, if you lose in five or six, like, it's kind of a bad beat. But, like, them's the breaks.
And even if you get to the finals and lose, if you had done it, if you'd beaten, like, that in and of itself is a, you can plant a little bit of a flag there. Like Philly with Iverson, they went to a finals. They never won a finals. It's
Knicks fans remember warmly the one year they were good with Carmelo Anthony. They didn't get to the NBA finals.
Plus, you'd be getting Oklahoma City a year earlier than next year when they'll be better. Right? That's the other thing. Like they look like, to me, unbeatable, but the extent that they are beatable, it might be bright lights and stuff like youth and whatever. So you want to get them this year. Like, there may be a limit to how good the opportunity is because Oklahoma City is so good, but at least now they're doing it for the first time, so there might be a puncher's chance. Yeah, I agree that it would be a missed opportunity. I'm curious, you don't monitor all this. Is Anthony Edwards getting criticized, and should he be, for his series against the Thunder?
I've seen a few things on social media, but honestly, like, I don't listen. Like, I listen to the Jeff Hawkins show. I don't listen to local Minnesota sports radio, so I got no idea what they're saying there. And, like, So I don't know. I detect there is some of that out in the cosmos. I've seen, like, my friend Britt Robson react to things on Twitter or whatever, but per usual, I don't see what he's reacting to. I just see the reaction. So I don't know. Well, once they lose, maybe I'll have a better feel for that.
Britt Robson isn't criticizing him. Should he be criticized? What have you made of his series? We don't know his state of health, I guess, partly. But they were really good.
Britt did make the point, sort of pushing back against the pushback a little bit, that, yeah, like I saw what he said was like, yeah, Edwards did play the right way in terms of reacting to the defense and moving the ball and all of that. But even on the shots he took, he shot a lower percentage on 13 attempts and SGA shot on 30. And like he was saying that like Edwards like played the quote unquote right way, but he didn't actually play that well, was basically what Brett was saying.
All right. Thank you, Chris. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
Chris Arrington from the Daily Memphian. You could read his mailbag over there. Have we come around, Jeffrey, to fundamentally believing that it will not be a particularly active offseason for the Grizzlies? What's our current? And by the way, has the mood changed in the populace? When Zach Kleiman said those things, it was at a time when everyone was angry and disappointed and enraged and whatever else. Now you've seen the Thunder. Honestly, not completely run roughshod. I mean, Denver took them to 7, you know, whatever. But you have seen, it's been reaffirmed how damn good they are. This series against Minnesota looks a lot like the Grizzlies series. A, do we believe they will be relatively quiet? And B, do we believe the fan base will be accepting of that?
I think first you have to answer the question of, are they going to be able to work out a deal with Jaren, right? Because in the event that they work out a deal with Jaren, they basically don't have a lot of flexibility for next year, because you would essentially be taking what cap space you had and converting that into Jaren, right? That's my understanding.
Yeah, you're limiting your options. There are still options to do things,
but
I think. I mean, you could still trade Desmond Bane. You know, there's nothing that, you know.
Yeah, I do think it's an interesting question of, in this version of the CBA, do you need three guys that are that highly paid?
It's funny, Jason and John asked Jessica Benson this yesterday, and or some version of this. Yeah, it was yesterday. And she said, well, don't forget, they fired their coach. Like, that really is. And that, I guess my question would be,
is that their big move?
I don't think. I can understand why, from an organizational perspective, you might be, what do you mean we didn't make major changes? We fired our coach.
Right.
Most people aren't buying that. A, because you fired him when you fired him.
Right.
It's not a change from what we just saw, from
correct,
what we just got, you know, because you fired him when we fired him, and it actually did a disservice to the reputation of Isolo. It might have been perceived as, and even then, because it's an internal change,
yep,
as opposed to a bring in an outsider.
And you didn't even really do a search.
And you didn't do a search. I don't think that is going to be passed off to fans as, hey, we reacted to the disappointment with a big organizational change by shaking it up. No, you just moved the one guy to the side and elevated the other guy, and then we saw what happened.
But I don't necessarily get the sense that that's what they're trying to pass off.
I don't think so either.
Because wouldn't they have done a press conference?
You would have thought. I'm still stunned they did not do a press conference.
Like, I was trying to figure out whether...
Has there ever been a head coach in any of the major leagues
I legitimately
that have been
was
hired without
this.
A press conference?
I've not seen an example.
Now, let me ask you this. If they do a press conference before Summer League, does that count as a press conference?
No. I don't think so, because...
No, that's the Summer League press conference, which we would have done anyway.
You didn't introduce him.
Holding up a freaking uniform.
Right. What's going to be in his office? Okay. Everyone's got the picture.
Well, let me ask you this. Did they do press conferences in... They didn't do one in Denver, because.
Well, I mean, that's the problem.
That's
like, I don't know. Like,
I don't think so. They wouldn't have done. They just had the playoff run, long playoff run. You don't follow that up with a press conference. So maybe it's not ridiculous.
I mean, I think it's now becoming an NBA thing, because
I'm sure they didn't. I can't believe they would have done it in Denver. We're going to introduce our new head coach.
I assume Phoenix is going to actually do it. An outside hire.
Phoenix is down to 4, and it's interesting. Phoenix is 4.
But everyone else hired their interim.
Sean Sweeney from the Mavs, Chris Quinn from Miami, and there's 2 others whose names escape me. And but yeah, so maybe I'm wrong here. Maybe, like, I can't believe that Denver would have done it.
I think it's a new trend in the NBA.
Right. And specifically, when you hire the interim,
yeah,
do you not have a – and if it's after a long playoff run, I don't know. Like, some of this is context. How much time has elapsed since we last saw them, when they got the job? I'm gonna retract my criticism for the no press conference. I do think
it did feel there was some suspense like they were, of it. But they felt like they news dumped it, and they felt like they were avoiding it.
I think that's partly why we treated it that way. Interesting, though, because I wouldn't have expected to Denver to do a press conference for Edelman. He just led him to a pretty, you know, moderately
14
successful.
Games.
And then
I think it's entirely possible they're going to play the most competitive series with the Thunder.
You take the eventual champion to 7 games. And
Jokic did.
So you did a end-of-the-season press conference, and then when they made the decision to bring it back, I don't know for certain, I don't believe they did a presser. So
I don't recall one, yeah. But I was not locked into Denver – to Denver media.
Nor was I. We got Sam Hardiman coming up next on the city of Memphis. I will tell you, hey, Memorial Day has passed. You might have noticed. And so it's not officially summer yet, but I cut a new Oak Hall. When is summer?
June 21st, right?
Is that when it is? It's summer, though. Isn't it summer? Is it not summer?
It's
summer
tough for me to declare summer.
When is it summer?
I don't feel heat out there.
That's an interesting question. It's been cool.
I mean, I know there's a lot of people saying I'm not complaining, which is fine.
So
but
it's
like,
not summer.
I feel like
I don't care what official
summer. I feel
summer
like
is.
This is late spring.
I think you may be right.
By the way, how good was it just to see the sun today?
It was nice that the sun cracked out.
Yeah, it's like, there it is.
So you don't think it's summer?
I have a heat standard.
Well, whether it's spring or summer, the place to go to get ready for spring or summer is Oak Hall. And I mean that. This is true. I was wearing the Johnny O thing that I told you about. It's a Johnny O thing. Just listen to me talking about clothes. That's why I need to go to Oak Hall. It's a long sleeve, like a swim shirt kind of, made out of a performance. It's a beautiful color. And I was skeptical, and Paul said, maybe you should think about buying this. So I literally was home the other day, and a guest came into our house, and the first thing she said was, God, I love that. I love that shirt. And like that's the kind of thing that never used to happen to me and happens to me all the time now. It's because the clothes are beautiful, but it's not just that. It's because they also like, this would be perfect. They have the experience, the knowledge of the people that work, it's amazing when you get the level of service that doesn't exist practically anywhere else anymore. And that's what happens at Oak Hall. So if you're getting ready for spring or summer, whichever you want to call it, whether it's backyard barbecues or elaborate trips somewhere or a sport coat for a summer or late spring wedding, get yourself to Oak Hall. Collect some compliments. We're going to take a break. Sam Hardiman's going to join us on the other side. It is the Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM ESPN.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses like Rise Bakery connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
At Designer Shoe Warehouse, we believe that shoes are an important part of, well,
everything. From first steps to first dates, from all-nighters to all-time personal bests.
From building pillow forts to building
a life. For all the big and small moments that make up your whole world, DSW is there. And we've got just the shoes. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love at brag-worthy prices. At your DSW store or DSW.com.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Back on the Jeff Calkins Show, joined by Sam Hardiman. He covers the city for the Daily Memphian. How you dealing with how are you managing, Sam, with Brad Marchand having a nice run with the Florida Panthers, and appears like he may win a cup with the Florida Panthers, and obviously you're a longtime Bruins fan, and he was a longtime Bruin.
Yeah, it's bittersweet. I'm not going to lie. Like, when I watch him and, you know, I see the great things that he does, right? And you remember all, like, it takes you back. And for a second, you don't really see the red jersey. You sort of see black and gold. And then you're like, oh, no, the Bruins aren't in the playoffs and we traded him. And, like, this happens, like, two or three times. Like I'll be, like, reading, because I usually am, like, reading and watching hockey kind of the same time. And I'll look up and I'm like, oh, what are the Bruins doing? I'm like, oh, that's just your former captain, man. It's not the actual Bruins. And so it's tough. I'm not going to lie. I'm glad we could go there, that emotional place today for people.
Well, all right. At least the sun came out. That was nice. The sun came out. You saw it yourself. Can you attest to that? You're a reporter. You know, you like to set out your eyes on something. Can you attest? Did you actually see the sun?
Yeah, I can attest. I mean, I'm actually, don't tell our office manager, but I'm actually in the construction site that will be our future offices.
Oh.
And I am looking out the windows there, and the cell service is much better, but also the sun. I can see the sun from where I'm at.
That's beautiful. All right, a couple items we need to discuss. One is, you did a piece on police salaries, because they're about to get another 5% raise, or we believe they're going to get another 5% raise. You said all this is tentative before it's actually in the budget and the budget is approved. A, are they going to get the 5% raise? And B, what's the trend here for Memphis police?
Yeah, I would say, you know, in terms of if I were a betting man, which I occasionally like to wager, I would say that the Memphis Police Association getting a raise in the Memphis City budget is about as certain as the Colorado Rockies being pretty bad at baseball this year. And so, like, there's a chance the Rockies turn around. There's a chance the Memphis Police Association doesn't get a 5% raise. I would not bet on either of those things personally. That is the trend. That is happening. And so what happened last week, and we discussed this, is the Memphis City Council in one fell swoop approved allegedly – I still haven't seen the actual math that maths this to make it $39 million. I've seen math that makes it $26 million. Somewhere between $26 million and $39 million worth of raises for employee associations of all types, including 5% for the Memphis Police Association. And so, as I said last week, none of this matters until it's actually funded in the budget. And so, you know, what I would hazard a guess is that maybe not all these associations received their raise, but the Memphis Police Association, being the largest, being the most politically powerful, and also we are in one of the most violent cities in America that desperately needs to retain police officers. And so all of those factors lead us to the Memphis Police Association very likely getting a raise.
So you have a quote from John Covington, who is the vice president of Memphis Police Association. And it's really quite a striking quote. I'm going to read it in total here. The officers who have stayed were sticking it out and staying the course, or being burned out, pushed to the limit. It's hard to get days off to spend with family. It's a grind. And in this job, in this town, you can go from the shooting of a child, wrap that call up, go to an auto accident where some innocent person has been ripped apart, to robbery, to rape. It just never stops. So the impact compounds. That's a hell of a bracing quote. I suspect it is some reflection of reality there. And even if this, I don't know, what the new starting salary would be $67,000. Is that right?
Yeah, it would be this would be $67,000 if you have not completed any college. Okay. You do get a certain amount for every year of college you have, as well as if you were to have a bachelor's degree, you would get more. If you have a master's degree, you would get even more than that. So just, you were coming out of high school, okay, and you wanted to become a Memphis police officer, you would start at $67,000, okay? And let's also keep in mind that if you were on the force for 20 plus years and, you know, get promoted, et cetera, you also are right now guaranteed a defined benefit pension, which means that you would get your salary your highest salary plus cost of living for the rest of your life. And so, like, over the past about 5 years, I would say, since the pandemic, coming out of the pandemic, the Memphis Police Department and the city have very aggressively raised these salaries, okay? And it's to boost this retention. It is to make it more, because one of the things that Covington pointed out in his comments to Memphis City Council, and this is a true fact in terms of what you would face if you are a police officer, and I'm not trying to take away from any police officers in any of Memphis's suburbs, okay? I want to make that clear. But you do not face the chaos and the mayhem if you're, say, a police officer in Germantown or Collierville that you face in Memphis, Tennessee.
There are people going up to 42 miles an hour down Poplar through Germantown, and they need to be reined in, Sam.
I mean, I have no doubt. I have no doubt of that. I understand. It is a really challenging job, and that's what the trend has been. And so now, I mean, if you're a sergeant right now, your salary is $84,000 a year. And so in this town, I mean, if you do, you know, cost of living calculators, that's, you know, comparable to well more than $100,000 in some of the biggest cities in America, right?
Right.
So, like, that's real money.
Well, and it's
living in Tennessee.
To get the pension, which, like, most Americans don't have anymore, to get that for the rest of your life is really, that is a hell of an impressive benefit. You did, though, in the piece, say that they've still been struggling with employee retention. And this was something I was struck by. The city recently stopped updating the number of police officers on its website. It usually had done that. It typically had done it and has now ceased.
Yeah. Yeah. So the city of Memphis operates something called the Data Hub, the Memphis Data Hub. And for years, every month, essentially, we get a new figure of the amount of officers on the Memphis police force. It was one of the city's goals to have, I think at one point, the goal was 2,500 officers. I think that goal was later adjusted to 2,100 officers. And right now, the city of Memphis is roughly around 1,890 police officers, which is pretty close to a low watermark over the past 10 years. And so they're struggling. I mean, and to the point, to Covington's quote a few minutes ago that Jeff read, you know, I ran into some firefighters at my apartment complex a couple weeks ago because some idiot pulled the fire alarm and they had to come turn it off, and they deal with tons of these false alarms. And they were from a station that also deals with a segment of South Memphis. And I was just asking him, how many shootings do you guys go and pick up bodies from on a regular basis? And the firefighters looked at me and they said, I don't know, we average about 5-6 a week, you know? And so if you just think about that, like how, like anyone seeing a shooting, that is a life altering event, right? The fact that you would be and I'm talking about firefighters here, not police officers, but the same thing would apply. The fact that this is just a habitual thing that you see constantly, that's going to shape you as an individual. So it's not a shock that the city of Memphis would struggle with retention for public safety and personnel.
All right. Onward to another story you've been covering, which is the dispute between the city council and the mayor over the budget. Can you outline that issue for us?
Yeah. So those raises I talked about created a need for more revenue or cuts in the budget. Okay. And so last week, the day after that the city council voted for these raises, right after we talked last week, I went to City Hall and there was a budget hearing. And four members of Memphis City Council, council members J.B. Smiley, Jerry Green, Phil Spinoza, and Mike Winnie-Sue Thomas, sponsored a budget amendment. And that budget amendment was intended to pay for these raises, cut some other things, and balance the budget. And part of that dispute, and this is maybe showed more fire from Memphis Mayor Paul Young, at least in a civic setting, in a government meeting setting that I've probably ever seen from him, was part of the dispute was the way that the budget was being balanced is the city of Memphis has been very conservative this year in terms of what it expects revenue to come in at, because they're looking, and you know, most banks nationwide are expecting a recession, right? And so they're looking at it and they're saying, why would we expect tax revenue to grow if we think the macroeconomic environment is going to get worse? Well, part of the way the city council balanced this budget was by making rosier economic expectations of local taxes. And that prompted from the mayor to simply say that's bad budgeting. That prompted Philip Spinoza to respond to the mayor, who had not put about $13 or $14 or $15 or $16 million from XAI property tax revenue in the budget, to say, well, that seems to me to be bad budgeting. And so it was quite the municipal finance kerfuffle, which is something I really enjoy. I'm not sure how much listeners are enjoying it, but
let me ask you this. Because you've written about the tax money expected from XAI before. If that was, is that enough? In other words, let's say the increased state tax money, the tax revenues, whatever, doesn't come through. But they do get the XAI money, whatever. Do those things balance out?
No, they do not. Essentially, no. I mean, the XAI money would be about $15 million. If you need $25-26 million, which
that's the rosier
map I see.
I see.
Yeah, you need, you know, when you're projecting one revenue stream to come in at $4 million more. We've talked in the past about how police overtime for special events, Grizzlies games, the St. Jude Marathon, the Redbirds, how there isn't a lot of revenue collected in terms of from the entities that are costing the city this police overtime. One of the revenue projections in that is, oh, we're going to go from collecting $500,000 in police overtime for these special events to all of a sudden we're going to get $4.5 million. We're just going to get this money all of a sudden. And so that would take a considerable work. It would take a lot of, like, you know, heavy handedness maybe from the police department. I don't mean heavy handedness in a bad way, but more of just like, hey, pay us our money. And so the XAI money is not going to bail out any of those things coming up short.
I guess.
Right. And so what was notable here is the mayor not including that money from XAI in the budget was essentially what he said, and you can read this on our story, but essentially if he had not included it in the budget, which now it will likely be in the budget, it was going to be, quote, a positive revenue surprise. And so what that indicated to me was the city of Memphis was essentially not going to put this in the budget, collect the money, and then because they desperately need to shore up the city's rainy day fund, stick that money in the rainy day fund.
Yeah, it would be nice. There have been a lot of negative surprises over the past year that you've covered, and so it'd be nice to have a positive surprise. So where does this go now? What's the process for getting through this?
Yeah, so right now that budget amendment, all these things have to come through essentially bills, which are resolutions. That budget amendment is on hold until June 2nd, which I guess is next Tuesday. I'm trying to remember what day that is. Sorry, the Brad Marchand stuff got me emotional, but they're going to debate it then. And we'll see how it gets amended. The city's got to pass this budget by the end of the fiscal year, which is June 30th. And we're obviously starting to get towards the wire. We've got a month left to go. And we'll see if there's some happy medium that the mayor's administration, the city council strike here.
All right. And then last thing, Sam, last week we talked about the Department of Justice retracting their report on the Memphis Police Department, and we wondered if that would impact how the city planned to reform and monitor the Memphis Police Department going forward. Do we have some answers on that?
Yeah. So yeah, my colleague Aaron Fleming attended a news conference, which was arguably about something else, but the mayor was obviously asked about this because it was the same day, and the mayor said it's not changing anything that we're doing, what happens here. And that, you know, it affirmed the approach that the city took to the Department of Justice, which in the waning days of the Biden administration, you know, presented this report, which showed scathing, you know, which was very scathing and showed what that the DOJ at that time argued were rampant civil rights abuses. And the city of Memphis has maintained that, you know, they don't have a visibility in the report. And what this is essentially, and keep in mind, and I think this is the really important thing. Everything Memphis Mayor Paul Young or any city official or police official say about this right now matters in a court of law because Tyre Nichols' family and estate are still suing the city of Memphis for tens of millions, if not hundreds of millions of dollars, right, in a civil rights lawsuit. So anything the city of Memphis says is subject to showing up in court. So it is not surprising the mayor said last week, yeah, this affirms our approach, right? Not surprising at all and not shocking.
You can read Sam's work over at the Daily Memphian. Thanks so much, Sam.
Thanks, Jeff.
Yeah. We're going to take a break. Back in a moment. Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM ESPN.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
DSW's semi-annual sale is back. Take 40% off all clearance shoes in stores for a limited time. Literally every single clearance item at your DSW store is on sale right now. Sneakers, sandals, any style. If they're on the clearance racks, they're 40% off. So what are you waiting for? Don't sleep on these savings. Get to DSW ASAP. It's all or nothing, people. Shop the DSW semi-annual sale today.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show. A few things real quick. One is, remember, if you want to see Roy Wood Jr. in Memphis June 8th, you got to buy tickets by noon because that's when they're cutting them off. Go to justcity.org. Secondly, happy birthday to Claire, my wife. Thrilled. How about that? After all these years? So, anyway, hope she has the happiest of birthdays. And I'll do my – I hope to do my part, Jeffrey. You know, that's the obligation a little bit as a – as a spouse. Third, I don't think it's even easy being a cop in Germantown either. I joked about it, but I think being a cop anywhere is a tough duty, and I don't want to be cops anywhere. It's a tough duty, and thank you for your service. Did you see what Terry Bradshaw had to say about Aaron Rodgers and the Jet and the Steelers' pursuit of Aaron Rodgers?
It's a joke, Jeff.
He said, "That's a joke. That to me is just a joke. What are you going to do? Bring him in for 1 year? Are you kidding me? That guy needs to stay in California. Go somewhere and chew on bark and whisper to the gods out there." I was wondering, is Terry Bradshaw still at it? And he's still at it. Like, isn't
they had like a weird, is he retiring send-off at the Super Bowl? But it appears not.
He says he wants to keep doing it till 29. I'll be honest. I think he's lost a little off the old fastball.
I totally agree.
And so that seems like a little bit of a stretch to me, although I enjoyed the comments about Aaron Rodgers. That was fun. Also, is not in the Pittsburgh Steelers Hall of Fame. Is that surprising to you? Surprising to me.
A little, and then you told me the only three people are.
Franco is?
I guess he's in the Hall, maybe the Steelers Hall of Fame, but he didn't have his jersey retired.
Mean Joe Green has had his jersey retired. Mean Joe Green has had his jersey retired. Franco Harris, and then Ernie Stotner. Old timer, but not Terry Bradshaw as of yet. All right, we got to get out of here. What's coming up next?
Jeff, the great Jarvis Greer joins Jason and John. Coach Hurd will join them during hour number three. Kevin Cerrito will be with me today on Jeffrey Wright and Company. CJ Hurt joins us during the second hour. David Cobb will be with Gabe at 5 o'clock.
Thanks for listening, everybody. We got to get out of here. Back tomorrow for an hour. Work is done.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.